In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours. We are going to be joined here by Josh Knapp in about 2 seconds and get the show going. Josh, you are with us?
I am, if you brought me in.
Yes, I did. Hopefully we're going to have a few extra listeners tonight that might not have listened to the show before in the past. So if you are listening live, I want to welcome you and thank you for joining us on the show. I believe we also have Dave. Brenner is in the queue as well.
Hi.
Dave, you with us? There he is.
I'm with you. Hi, Jim.
There he is. Yeah, we had to do a little communication issue, gang. In case anybody listening, you know it's a little bit of a delay in the beginning of the show. Just having some software issues more than anything else that are sort of beyond our control. But we are still live and pretty much, I think, working on 3.5 cylinders.
Present and accounted for.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're listening to us, but you can check us out on Twitter. We're at EMS Safe on Twitter, trying to tweet out some stuff as we go along with that. And we're, of course, we're on Facebook, and the Facebook page is facebook.com/EMS Office Hours. I'm also launching the chat room as well. If you're listening and you want to join us over in the chat room, there's a live chat that's going to be open here in a moment. You can probably see that below the actual show on the page. If you don't see it, just go ahead and refresh your page, and it'll probably be popping up in a minute or two on the show page. So if you don't see, just go ahead and refresh, and you'll be able to go ahead and see the show there. What other housekeeping stuff do we got going on today? I'm trying to think. As always, the one I do want to mention, any of the listeners out there, whether you're into a live show or a recorded show, if you don't feel comfortable calling us live in the show or joining us in the chat room, or even tweeting or on Facebook or whatever, you want to try to remain anonymous, but you feel like you want to have your voice heard, you want to have your opinion listened to and maybe brought up on the show without using your name or anything like that, that's fine. I can respect that. But the way you can do that is you can send an email to me, to the show's email. That is contact@emsofficehours.com. So you can send an email to that, and any opinions or comments you have, of course, based on what you say to me or what you request me to do, I'll go ahead and bring those to the show when we do a live show or we do a recorded show, or even maybe mention it over on Facebook. But I'll, of course, respect your privacy by doing that. So I kind of understand that level. If you're a little bashful and don't want to come on the show live, that's fine. But again, don't feel like you can't have your voice heard or you can't have your opinion expressed here for others to hear what you have to say about the topics that we talk about. And you can do that just by sending us an email. And again, that email is contact@emsofficehours.com. Today, Joshua, Dave, I wanted to sort of, 9/11 is coming up next week, next Thursday, well, this Thursday, I guess, depending on how you phrase that. And, Josh, I know you've been to the memorial, and I've heard other people sort of mention things about the memorial, and some of the things that are sort of a little bit of a turnoff, especially from a provider point of view. And I've heard things, everything from, the ticket prices are too high, to get in to begin with, the amount of merchandise that they're selling, seems to be above and beyond, and sort of almost like a blatant sort of tourist trap, more than a place for, you know, remembrance or a place for reflection on things. So, Josh, I don't know if you recall, if you feel comfortable mentioning some of the things that you've experienced when you went to, when you got a chance to go to the memorial, what your takeaway was from that. I don't know if you want to share that or not with the listeners. So that's up to you. And I did get some replies from people who responded to some of the things that I've asked, but a lot of them feel it's very personal, you know?
Well, it is very personal. I mean, it's one of the more seminal events in our lifetime. For many of us, including me, it changed their lives. And it's hard to capture that in words. The memories, and when you go to a site, you know, that you have had involvement in, and you go to like a memorial where there's some sort of interaction, you know, like this museum, like the Memorial Museum was, there's a lot of conflicting thoughts that go on. And certainly, you know, if it's something very personal to you, there is an aspect when you're put in your face the aspect of commercialism, it becomes, it can't help but rub you the wrong way. And there were a lot of things there that I thought were kind of depressing. Besides the subject matter, I mean, like, you know, for what I saw, the price of the tickets, for how, you know, they were acting very gracious in giving, you know, people who participated in the rescue recovery, we'll give you a free day, but never to be invited back again. And it's, it's so massive you can't take it in one sitting.
Yeah.
I know I'm a little bit all over the place, but it was a very, very difficult show to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to try to break into your emotional aspect of it. I mean, I don't want to do that for myself even. I know when Ground Zero was still being cleaned up and they were trying to clean it up and getting ready to rebuild and all, I had a hard time even just driving by the place, you know, and seeing Ground Zero, you know, going on. But I'm trying to maybe put into perspective, like you said, Josh, the emotional aspect of it and the commercialism that seems to be sort of there. And, you know, sort of is it negatively looked upon by EMS providers and FDNY and police and other rescue workers that were there during and immediately after the event? You know, is that commercialism a turnoff because of that? You know, people, like you said, are people more sensitive to it because of that? Or are they really kind of over the top with some of the stuff that they're doing? You know?
That you're really asking an opinion statement. And, you know, I can't speak for everybody else. Like I said, you know, you're mixing blatant commercialism in with a very personal, very moving, very eventful experience. I mean, you know, people who responded, look, in some of my critical incident stress classes and stuff, we talked about the walking wounded, and we talked about how impossible it is to really get New York people into the critical incident stress program, because one of the requirements is that, you know, you not be still in a critical mode. And I'm not sure anybody from the New York area who has participated in any aspect of, you know, the World Trade Center event can non-emotionally or very clearly look at what took place during that time or the offshoot of what took place during that time with a level and a clear head.
Dave, do you have any immediate thoughts on it, Dave?
You know, this is not one of the, I don't have a popular view on this thing. I'm not going to tell you my entire view because there's no point. I don't need to piss people off. I was there. Obviously, I didn't die. I wasn't there in the buildings when they collapsed. I was there shortly afterwards. It was awful. It was an awful event, and these memorials are not. They don't give me any solace. I don't know who they give solace to. They don't help me. Maybe it's just my relationship, my spiritual relationship with the world or God or whatever you want to say, whatever you want to think it is. I don't feel guilty for not having died there. I don't for one second say, gee, I wish it was me, although I do know people who believe that.
Sure.
I know a lot of people that if they had it to do all over again, if we could just go back, they would just be standing at the bottom because they felt guilty they didn't die when colleagues died. And I don't feel guilty I didn't die. And I have to say another unpopular view is that a lot of people have died in a lot of other ways, heroically, intentionally putting their lives in danger.
Right.
And they are no lower heroes than these fellas. But these folks, these ladies and gentlemen who died on that day, they died in an event that the whole world saw. If somebody died in a small fire, in a small event, nobody knows about it, or the town knows about it. They're a hero for a week. They don't get a day. It doesn't go down in history. I mean, the momentous occasion here was yet it's another day telling us how dangerous our world is. And
you know, there's a lot of aspects to that, Dave. And I'm not going to fault you for your opinion and your viewpoint.
It's not an opinion.
That.
It's a feeling. So
it's a feeling, right? You're
entitled to it.
Spot. You're absolutely entitled to it. And I don't think that there's an aspect where they're putting these people on a higher pedestal than anybody else who dies in the line of duty. I think that you hit it on the head that this is far more public. I think that the other aspect that can be attributed to this that's not usual, that's not, something that could be attributed to a house fire or an MVA or any other place that first responders respond that are a risky situation, is the unknown. You know, nobody knew what was going on. And if you remember those hours and those days after, nobody had a clue. You know, we were all still guessing what the hell happened. You know, as the government trickled out little bits of information, but in the days and the hours after, it was purely response mode. And people were, stepping up, getting back into old realm, old roles. I saw a thing on what's his name? Mike Buscemi? Is it Buscemi?
Uh-huh. Well, Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi. Jesus, Mike. I wasn't aware of this. I mean, I knew he was a firefighter before he got into acting, and I know he's a New Yorker. But he happened to have been around that time. He went back to his old engine company, and even though he left the fire department, he brought out his turnout gear, and he jumped on an engine, and he served the city of New York because that's, in his mind, what needed to be done. You know, there's an exceptionalism that was shown is not a rare thing, but it's rare when so many people at the same time do it. And I
look at the show Rescue Me that sort of revolves around that as well. You know, a popular show, and it's based on some of the loss of life on that too. How some of that haunted the main character throughout the entire series. Mm. You know, so I understand what you're saying, Dave, and I agree with you. It doesn't make other people that have died in the line of duty, their sacrifice any less. But I think, like Josh has added, I guess the reason why this gets a memorial and gets an annual sort of remembrance and is because of the fact that there was so many at once, and because of the way it happened, is why I guess it gets that additional attention. A lot of line of duty deaths are remembered by, annually by different agencies or even by organizations every year, depending upon, where you are. Fire department has that, fire has their own sort of annual remembrance of line of duty deaths, and police have their own sort of deal as well. So it might not be as, I guess, the media doesn't grab onto it like they would this, but I mean, some of the feedback I got when talking about this and the things we talk about as far as the commercial aspect of it, most of the people feel that it's just a little bit, I guess out of control, where it's not just selling some t-shirts. I mean, they've got things there like bow ties for like $55, plush rescue dogs rescue dogs, and Paulie Jr. from the Chopper Show has his designs there, so it's stuff like that I think is what rubs people the wrong way.
Can we back up a second and because...
We can back a couple of seconds.
Well, not with that, not everything working, you can't. But,
we have that luxury here on the show. We can do what we want.
My opinion and feelings are that they shouldn't have any... I think the idea of a gift shop in that museum is just plain out-and-out nuts. I just think it's crazy. So, talking about plush dolls, talking about commemorative plates.
Jewelry on there,
Even from the vendors on the street. I mean, they were taking, as a perfect example, there was an article in the paper recently, because there's a very popular wares, dinnerware, dishes, ceramicware, a place called Fish and Eddie. It's a shop in New York, and they do a lot of one of a kind type prints and runs and things like that. And they did want the New York City skyline that happened to have the World Trade Center on it because it was pre 9/11, and they still produce it because it's one of the more popular dinner sets worldwide. Well, the World Trade Center Museum started offering the line, because it had the World Trade Center on it. And then they went and they sued Fish and Eddie to have them stop selling it in their stores. That's how crazy these people are. I mean, if anything that the museum shows, it shows that, this whole process of creating a memorial got out of hand. It had too many cooks, and they lost the vision, they lost touch with where they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to be doing, and hence we get plush 9/11 bears in a 9/11 gift shop in a memorial to one of the most horrific events on American shores.
It seems, and like I said, most of the people, the feedback that I've gotten is based sort of, on that theme. One person wrote me back, and they feel that, history gets preserved, and taught to future generations by having a museum like this, and that it should be a springboard for dialogue, for emergency service, for EMS, and or maybe a positive image that evolved after the event for EMS. I get that it can be used, for that, and it should be looked at in that way. And I think the museum itself, I guess it has that purpose, and that's what I imagine what most of us should be focusing on, right, is that aspect of it, that end of it, the fact that it's a place to remember and reflect and all that. And but I guess as it, most people that were there that day, they maybe they can't get past things like seeing the word gift shop, you know. And one person, which I'm not even sure if this is true, is about a part of it being set for Muslims to worship. I'm not sure how true that is or not, but they asked, you know, why is that the case? That this show in and of itself to discuss something, you know, that sort of controversial. But, you know, I guess, like I said, I think the main issue from the responder point of view is they're going there to remember, they have more of a personal connection than the person that's coming from, let's say, you know, California or something, that's here visiting and they want to see them, they want to go visit the memorial. They don't have that personal connection with the place, so that commercial aspect of it doesn't really affect them the way it would somebody that was actually there, you know.
I wonder if that's true, though, because, you know,
I don't know.
The events of 9/11 affected the entire country in a very profound way. And I got to tell you, working at the site for as many months as I did, I met people from all over the country who were there on their own dime, who were there because they felt they had to contribute, they felt they had to do something. And, you know, and it was a very profound response. You know, it was, at the time, we sort of had a little saying inside that, you know, everybody's a New Yorker, because a lot of people felt, you know, a lot of people were coming from towns and cities and towns, I would say, that have no, you know, New York has no bearing on reality for them. It was completely overwhelming. And so, you know, here we were, you know, citizens of the city who were completely shocked and disoriented for the most part, hosting these people from out of town who just want to help. And, you know, I think we did a pretty good job as being gracious hosts. But I don't think, you know, going back to what your statement is that, you know, somebody from California who just wants to see it is, you know, can be more tolerant of a gift shop. I'm really not sure. I think that the site has as much potency and importance to them as it does to the people who were here and lived through it. You know, I mean, if you think about the Oklahoma City bombing, they have a memorial there. I don't think that they have a gift shop.
Hey, Josh?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, possibly along those lines, I think you're right that this was an event that everybody in the country, more or less, was part of if they were old enough to understand. I mean, it's like, you guys are probably too young, but I know where I was the minute I found out that Kennedy was shot. I don't know where I was half the time. I don't know where I was an hour ago, but I know where I was when Kennedy was shot. Of course, I can't find my keys. But people from all over the country took this personally. In a very strange turn of events, I was at a conference shortly afterwards. When I say shortly, a couple of months afterwards, and it was an EMS conference, and I had flown in, and I was in an airport returning to New York, and I was wearing one of the shirts that indicated, you know, I was in the EMS from New York, and a guy from the military, active in the military, who was also at the airport, came over to me and he said, were you at 9/11? Were you there? I said, I was there. And he came over and he thanked me for what I did. Nice, interesting reversal. And he wasn't from New York. I don't even know if he was in the United States when it happened. But this affected everybody. First for the tragedy, and secondly because it was an act of terrorism. You know, it was just a tragedy in itself. Had it been an accident, it would have been a tragedy everybody remembered.
Yeah.
But we were all affronted as well.
Right.
And so I think I think that all of us were affected. I don't think there was anywhere in the United States that they were unaffected by this. There were, may not have been people as affected as some of us. And I think EMS and fire rescue folks all over the country felt the ripple on all of this.
Yeah.
All of us.
However,
I'm going to say it again. I don't feel guilty that I live.
I don't want to harp on that, Dave. I think it's kind of interesting that you say it, and you said it several times here. Because that had never been an issue for me.
Do you know people it's an issue for them?
No, I don't. That's the
really?
Thing. I really don't. I don't know anybody who's still carrying a chip on their shoulder saying I should have been there at that time.
I've heard people that feel that have that survivor's guilt type thing.
Yep.
Oh, I've heard. I know there are people that feel that way. I'm just saying that among the people that I've worked with who have been there, they're very much glad that they survived. They're sad about their colleagues that they lost. And keep in mind, you know, in my organization, we had four individuals who were part of that organization. I see their pictures all the time. We ride with their shield numbers on the back of all of our ambulances, you know. So there's an aspect that, you know, they are still currently missed and still currently remembered. However, I don't know anybody that has ever said that, you know, with that I work with.
Well, okay.
I know
more than one.
Okay.
I want to end this segment, guys, real quick. But before I do, I mean, in fairness to the museum, I do want to mention, you know, if anybody doesn't realize that they have a thing on their website when they talk about the gift shop and the stuff that gets sold there. They say that the proceeds that they earn from that go towards upkeep of the museum and the increasing cost to keep doing the things to I guess complete it. I guess the things they haven't that they want to do that they have not done yet. So you know, I don't want to think you know that to make it seem like they're this you know money hungry type thing. You know, but they do say, you know, that the proceeds are going towards, you know, towards that. So I want to mention that. The other thing I want to mention, too, you talk about remembrance and all. You know, I encourage people. I did a blog post a few years ago about one of the FDNY voluntary members that died, David Sullins, that had passed away in the tower, and I did a sort of blog post talking about his sacrifice, during that day. So I encourage everybody to go check that out. I'll put a link to that blog post in the show notes so people can go check it out on the blog. And the other thing I want to mention, too, before we move on to another segment here is the 9/11 memorial, it's going to be open to the public on the anniversary itself. Now, my understanding is that the day for the ceremony itself, on Thursday itself, is going to be closed to the public, but they are opening it up that night before, I believe it is, or maybe that night, the night of 9/11. They're going to be open from 6 p.m. to midnight. For that, so anybody that wants to go on that day, it's going to be open to the public that night from 6 p.m. to midnight, so people can go and pay their respects there and view, you know, some of the museum there, and of course they're going to have the twin beams the tribute and light going on there and all that as well. So I guess if you're in New York City, of course, I encourage you to go.
Okay, so that's the end of this week's episode of EMS Office Hours. Next week, we're going to pick up on the second segment from this live episode, so that recording will be posted this coming Sunday at Blog Talk Radio and on the blog at emsofficehours.com. Of course, if you have any comments, concerns, questions about this episode, love to hear them. Send them over to me. My email address is contact@emsofficehours.com. Until next week, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman, stay safe.